Welcome to the podcast!
Come be part of the conversations that happen around my kitchen table.
He's John Brannion, and he's been a stand-up comic for more than 30 years.
She's Amanda McKinney, and she's been my daughter for her whole life.
Our family believes laughter is a gift from God. We often discover it while discussing culture, faith, and family.
So go ahead and pull up a chair, neighbor. Can I call you Carl? There's plenty of room here for you. Threw some discs.
Oh, I pulled that down really fast.
Threw some discs for the first time this season. And it went pretty well, Peach. Thanks for asking.
I was there. I didn't need to ask.
I know. I'm working on it. So you saw how well it went. I'm working on my forehand,
you
Carl.
Still haven't... Nobody has done a hole in one, right?
It's called an ace, but yes, that's...
It's called a hole in one to anyone else who doesn't know about disc golf.
I've never heard it called a hole in one
in disc golf. That's the term that Carl would know.
Because you're not... You're actually throwing at a basket. You're not throwing at a hole.
Right.
So,
okay. Well, point being, you've never done that thing that everyone else who doesn't play disc golf would refer to as a hole in one.
Well,
it's just called a good throw, old chap. That's what it's called.
So I'm trying to throw forehand. That's my goal this season, to get to where I am equally bad forehand as I am backhand.
You want it up now?
There you go.
Sorry, yeah. We just have to really adjust Luke's headphones.
Mine is kind of quiet.
Perfectly. Too. He said they were too loud. Now they're too quiet.
Yeah.
Want to make sure that that's just right.
It's just right for Luke.
That's decent.
So it's a nice day. We hope that you're enjoying the sunshine and the warm weather wherever you're at, Carl.
I'm going to go look and see if the last week's podcast was even
uploaded. The Peach is not sure that we actually posted a podcast last week.
I'm pretty sure now that I'm thinking about it that we didn't, because I tried and the kids were in a play and I was in the lobby of said play. Oh, for heaven's sake. Now I can't. I was waiting for their play to start and I was trying to upload the podcast, but I was on my hotspot on my phone instead of on Wi-Fi because it was in a place where I couldn't get on the Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really struggling to upload that thing with my hotspot. Luke doesn't even like it when I try.
Right, because it's really slow and patchy.
Because we pay for data.
But
well,
I wrote
it does
a whole,
take up data too.
Like I wrote a whole summary, a whole write-up, like I always do, and I went to publish it.
You guys don't have unlimited data?
No.
In 2024,
nope.
In the United States of America, you don't have unlimited data.
It is cheaper for us to do it the way that I'm... We left Verizon... Because we were at like $118 a month for our two phones, and we were sharing.
Get out of here. So what do you do now?
We were sharing 8 gigs, which was not working. And so I left them for U.S. Mobile, and now we have both phones, and we're still sharing 8 gigs, but it's like $34 a month, something like that.
That's quite a bit cheaper.
And it uses the Verizon network. And if I want more gigs, like it'll alert me that we're about to use them up, it's $2 a gig. So I just top up a little bit, and I'm good to go.
For a gig.
Yep. Yeah. It's not uploaded.
So
my fault.
U.S. Mobile.
I did upload it, but then it didn't take. And I left it to continue doing its thing for like a solid 10 minutes. I let it go, and it never did. And then my computer went to sleep, and I was like, uh-oh. So I checked on it later and was pretty sure that it didn't go through and do it. So.
Well, here's what I was thinking about as you were trying to figure out whether or not you uploaded the podcast, and it turns out you didn't. That the weekly, you know, commitments that we have, the regular commitments that we have, are things that we... It's really hard to decide when a thing needs to end.
Dad can't hear Silas and Emery.
What'd he say?
I don't know what he's saying other than just happy noises. He goes, aha, what the heck?
I can see him. I see his lips moving, but I can't hear what he's saying.
I don't know if it's coming through or not. I can definitely hear it, though.
Yeah. He's pretty jolly. So we were talking today about our communion system that we use and the reason we were talking about it is because last week, the person who was supposed to set up our communion, Carl, for some reason forgot or was out of town and forgot to get a replacement, I guess, is what happened. And so just before the service starts, senior minister comes in with his hair on fire. It's like, we don't have any communion set up. And so Luke and I leaped into action and started setting up communion and discovered that it's pretty difficult because our system is such to where we have two, we have the bread and then we have the juice and they each come in a cup. And so we put the cups in the tray and then we put bread in the cup and then we put another cup in that cup and then put juice in on top of it. And people go, well, why don't you just use those pre-made cups that has bread and juice in it? And the answer is because those things, if you don't use them within a certain period of time, they become pretty foul. Mm-hmm. And so we served pretty foul communion a few weeks and decided, well, we're not gonna do this anymore. But the reason we do the two cups goes all the way back to COVID, mm-hmm. when everybody was afraid that if we put our hands in the same bread pan and pulled out those little pieces of square bread, that we would kill each other with contaminants. And so in order to make, I guess, some people feel comfortable, we started doing this two-cup thing. And I said to the guys in the kitchen, I said, why don't we just go back to passing two trays, pass a tray with juice and pass a tray with bread. Why don't we just do that? And everyone goes, yeah, why don't we just do that? And then that was the end of it. But that was when
was it the end of it? Did you go ahead and do two cups again?
Well, we went ahead. It wasn't my. We didn't do it this week. It was somebody else did it. But the, what was brought up was how this is what happens. You establish a thing in an institution like the church, you know, where this is how we do communion, and then you do it that way forever. And no one ever goes, hey, why don't we do this a different way? It stays that way.
I don't think that's necessarily the way it's like in every institution.
Just the way that way. It's just that way in our church.
I've experienced the opposite. We had a CNO, a chief nursing officer, a new one come to our hospital. And she basically put all of our meetings up on like a board and then like just wiped out half of them. She was like, we're going to get rid of, we have too many meetings at Tipton. We're going to get rid of half of these meetings. And she did. And it was great. Because you weren't in meetings all day, but it turns out some of those meetings were necessary.
Were important, right?
For like regulatory reasons, you have to have these meetings. And right. So sometimes you can too hastily make changes too dramatically.
Right.
But.
Right. Well, that's my.
I think that it is more common what Luke is describing. I think
really?
It's more
you
common.
You think that's more common?
For a single personality, somebody who's at the top, top down. Making decisions, I think that's more likely the scenario in any given organization. And I'm not saying that that's good or bad. I'm just saying I think it's more often that most of the time businesses don't just exist. They don't, like, the phenomenon happening at our church where it's just a machine that's been kind of chugging along on momentum.
And no one is in charge of it
anymore. Nobody's pushing the gas.
Well, as you were saying that, I was just thinking, what would happen if one of the grunts who makes communion said, I'm not messing around with this anymore. These cups are hard. They're stuck together. I'm just going to pass two trays. Well, I wonder what would happen.
That would no longer be a grunt. That would be what
that
you
would be
the
call person making a decision.
A leader. And that would be what normally happens in an organization when somebody takes it upon themselves to decide. And like when Tabby and I were talking about this last summer because our kids were playing on the Police Athletic League soccer team. Okay.
Pal.
This was the first year that Tabby's daughter, Marcy, played soccer at all, and Tabby ended up as the coach.
Right.
Maybe last summer was the second year, but coach the year Tabby. Before that was her first year, and Tabby was the coach then, too. Mm-hmm. So Tabby coached Marcy on soccer during her first year because they're having a hard time finding coaches.
Right.
And Tabby was like, not only that, but come the end of the season, the commissioner says to her,
they want to make me queen of
will
soccer.
You write a form that I can pass out to other parents about how to be a coach? Like, I want you to design the curriculum, I guess.
I want you to infuse your personality into sheets of paper that we can pass out to people.
Teach other people how to do this. Because... Right. People don't. And like the only thing that sets Tabby apart, the main thing that sets Tabby apart that tends to happen with anybody who ends up becoming a leader
in leadership
is she just goes, here's a need. And here's how I think that that need should be met. Here's how, here's a problem and here's a solution that I think is a smart solution. So if somebody pushes back on this for any reason, if somebody else has a different idea about what would be a solution, I will listen to that and I will either A, explain to them what I was thinking and why I still think my way is better, or B, adopt their idea because it turns out theirs is better. But either way, here's this problem and here's what I think would be the best way to fix it. And so many people wait for permission. Like, so many people don't take initiative to, like, do a thing because they don't feel like they don't have ownership.
Well, and that would be, and that's, that is correct. It's correct to wait for permission before you walk into somebody's house, for example. But if you're going to walk into somebody's house, then it's pretty clear who you need to get permission from. In something like, it's the owner of the house, but in something like, are we going to pass two trays or are we going to keep doing this, this old stupid way? It's not clear who's in charge of that.
Well, that
it's not clear who you ask.
I still don't think that that's the case. Like, with theoretically, you would ask permission of the commissioner in the soccer league. But the problem is, like, we as people who have been in charge of some stuff in the past, we know that he can't field questions from every single coach and every single parent for every single tiny little thing.
Right.
So when it comes to decisions like, when should I get my team together to do practices? Where should we meet for practices? How often should we do practices? Like, all of that stuff. You can't expect him to personally walk you through. He might as well be the coach himself, and he can't do that. He can't coach 10 teams. And so so the coaches need to take some responsibility, but there are a lot of people who don't know that they need to take the responsibility.
That was the point that I was trying to make, was not that this is the correct thing to do, that that you should wait for permission or you should figure out who to ask. My point was that there isn't anybody to ask. And to your point, most of the time, like, who is it important to that we pass two trays versus one? I mean, who?
That's not the question to ask.
Who's going to get bent? No, that's not the question.
Because it's important to somebody.
I'm saying the reason that we don't do it is because the person who's in charge of doing communion, week to week to week, it's different people, have been told this is how we do communion, and no one has thought, well, this is a dumb way to do it, and it's inefficient, so I'm going to change it.
But there will be somebody who will, some grunt who's not in leadership, somebody who's not taking any initiative, who's not letting themselves into the church and doing work to help get ready for Sunday morning, who will notice that something is different and then suddenly realize that it's the most important part of their week to have two cups for communion. That will happen, but people are afraid of that reality. They don't know how to stand up to somebody who's not contributing but still trying to influence decisions. And so that's what they're afraid of. They're afraid of having somebody who will complain, and that will happen eventually because people are people.
Well, it wouldn't be a change just to make a change. We're not being a good steward of our resources. We're double the amount of cups. For a while, we weren't even passing the trays. We had them on a table outside the sanctuary. You grabbed it you went
in. It's twice as many cups, and it takes twice as long to set it up.
Right.
It's harder to set it up, and it's bad all the way around.
The reason we stopped just leaving the trays on the back tables is because giving was way higher when we were actually passing plates. And so if we follow that same logic, we would save money by not using two cups.
Right. So the point
better
is,
for the budget all around.
You have a reason when you're actually involved. Like, when you're a person who's responsible for filling the communion cups, for example, then suddenly you've got skin in the game and you've got an opinion because you know what you know how much time it takes, and you know that whatever system you're coming up with as an alternative has some pros for everyone else who's in the same position you are. So, but it's still hard for people, I think, to stand up to those who are ignorant but still very emotional about whatever the situation is. And so they don't want to do anything. They don't want to take initiative. But what I try to explain, because Tabby can be one of these people too, if she gets intimidated, if somebody stands up and is especially aggressive for whatever reason, you shouldn't do this or you shouldn't do that. I'm the person who's like, says who, you know, like I gave it some thought, and I am the one who's actually putting in the work here. So, you know, sit down or here. You come and coach, you know, you won't do that because you're lazy, but But she's one who's like, oh no, you know, I've upset somebody and I don't want to be arrogant. I don't want to be a bulldozer. You know, I don't want to come into this. It's my first year in the league. My daughter's only 5. I don't want to just steamroll everybody, you know? So what should I do?
I'm trying to imagine Tabby steamrolling people, but
well, okay. She feels like she is, because if you have to get in a tiff with somebody like that, it's kind of exhausting. And so I have had to remind her, and she knows this is true, and people who are in leadership of any kind know it's true. When you do take initiative, the commissioner really appreciates it. And like the CEO of the company, or the other people who are also coaches, you know, other parents who are actually volunteering their time and helping, they appreciate decisiveness.
So who is critical? Who are we afraid of? Are the people who are going to be critical? Who are those people? Who are the people that stand up and say, well, this isn't the right way to do it. This isn't the way that we've done it. Who gave you permission to do this? Who said that it was okay? Who are those
people?
Well,
they don't even ask that question usually, because they haven't thought that far. It's usually just like a knee-jerk emotionalism. I don't even think they hear themselves talking. It's like in the middle of a heated game, for example, it's a soccer game and, you know, tensions are high. They just spew the first thing that comes to their heads. And if you like give it the tiniest bit of scrutiny at all, you just kind of, if you just ask their question back to them, it like has a way of disarming them, because it's so stupid and so unnecessary. But so they're people who I don't even think, we've talked before about people who use words for a reason other than to communicate something clearly. That's what this is. They're using words that you're tempted to actually like reflect on a little bit, but actually you're doing more reflecting than they did before they just blah, 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 like word vomited.
So you're suggesting that the people who would criticize us for going back to 2 trays mm-hmm. are not actually even thinking about going back to 2 trays. They're just expressing that they've noticed that things are different. Is that what it is?
A lot of people
they're just
don't like
voicing,
difference.
Hey, this is not what we've done before.
Yeah. Yeah, and they will then try to find a reason for why it's bad.
Why it's a bad thing.
Later. Like after they notice themselves having negative feelings about it, it's like, well, there must be a reason for my negative feelings. Oh, I know. It's probably because this is way more of a germ spreading thing or whatever. They'll come up with whatever excuse will justify it later. But that's not why they spoke up originally. They just spoke up because...
Now I kind of want to change the communion next week. I kind of do.
See how many different things you can change.
We're already doing the bare minimum when it comes to breaking bread. You know what I mean?
You mean the communion service?
American communion is pathetic. But
our communion services.
I want to see you come in with like freshly baked unleavened bread.
With loaves of bread. Well, it actually should come in with a whole meal.
Yeah.
It should come in with a whole meal, and then we eat it. And then at the end of that meal is when we do the...
And it isn't all programmed down to the minute.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there is an argument to be made about whether efficiency is the goal here. And so, if somebody wanted to write in and say, well, look, here's my reason for objecting to the juice and the cracker setup system you've got going on.
Right.
And it's thoughtful. Well, okay. You know, that bears talking about. But I'm just talking about the people who don't get involved in any capacity. They don't volunteer for most things most of the time. And yet they still want to, you know, register their disagreement about certain decisions. And that happens a lot. And the converse is also true.
It's funny.
Like Tabby, when her kids get involved with stuff, and I have noticed this with myself too, when we get our kids involved with something, it is literally just a matter of a few weeks before we're being shuttled, you know, responsibilities.
Before you're being given assignments.
Yeah. Well, literally.
There's almost always a call to action. And zero voices speaking up.
Right.
And so.
Because they'll say, we need somebody who's able to do this, that, or the other thing. And I'm like, well, I can't do this or that, but I can do that other thing. And so then I reach back out to whoever asked. And they're like, you are the only one who answered.
Right.
Like the only person who actually responded. And so it's funny because my kids are new this year to the classical school that they're now attending, the older two. And because it's being hosted by our church, I already have a key. So I'm literally letting myself into their school
to do things
twice a week to go and like tutor kids in reading. And then this week is their main spring fundraiser. It's happening on Saturday. And Dad's going to be the auctioneer now for this thing. That came up a few days ago. Mm-hmm. That became a thing that's going to happen.
And how did I get...
It wasn't me.
How did I get assigned that?
It wasn't me. I did not say it. Originally, it was going to be the county commissioner. Uh-huh. Speaking of commissioners, our friend of ours.
Ex-county commissioner.
But he can't do it because he's going to be at auctioneer school that night.
That is so funny.
So, no kidding. I didn't make that up. He's going to be gone and busy. And so you're going to do it. And they asked me because they know that you're a guy who holds a microphone. Mm-hmm. So... And that happens. And then you just say yes. But then once you take on the role, whatever the role is, you ask for some guidelines. I'm going to ask tomorrow what they want you to do.
Right.
But then a person who does a job well is somebody who takes a little bit of leeway. Like they feel it out. Well,
I am not an auctioneer. No. I've never been to auctioneer school. I don't know how to do the thing that they do where they do the... It has a name, and I can't remember what it's called.
It's not hawking, is it?
That's no. What they do it's got a shows. Name. A patter. Is it their patter? Mm-hmm. But I don't do that. But that is on point because there are people who would go, oh, well, I can't be your auctioneer because I've never been to auctioneer school and I don't know.
Right.
I don't know or they would how say, the auctioneers do
you
the gotta, thing.
You have to write me a script. Like, right. You just need to hand me 6 pages of word for word. You just want me to read it into the microphone.
I need to see what's going to be sold so I can have an idea of what I'm going to talk about and everything.
I'm still going to ask for that.
And
just
all
because
of that stuff, I just get on the fly.
I know you don't need it. I'm going to ask for a list of things that they're intending for you to sell anyways, because actually my concern, it's just a mild concern, but I'm concerned that you might go too long because you're so used to holding a microphone and because you're not going to do the fast talk thing because you can't. I don't want to spend too much time on any one item, so I want to see how long the list is so we can kind of get a feel for how much.
Believe it or not.
He needs to get each item to 1,000 before he stops.
Believe it or not, Peach. I do have some sense of time. And so if they say we want to be done by this time, I'm capable of...
Yeah. How are you going to do that if you don't know how many things are on the list? That's what...
Well, I assume I'll see how many things are on the list that night.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's true. But I was trying to get that in advance because then that way, if you have any ideas for like ways that you can increase the bidding, right. Because they've brought kids on before, like students to pout, you know, or
orphans.
Yeah. I've done all of those things. This is not the first time I've ever run an auction. I've done several auctions before. My point was that I'm not an official auctioneer. And so it would be a thing that if I thought there was a particular person who's the poobah of auctioneers that I had to get permission to be an auctioneer from him, then I would turn this down because I don't qualify.
Yeah, and it's pertinent to this week, actually.
Your point is that when you're asked to do a thing or when you're doing a thing, you do the thing the way you think the best way to do the thing is.
Right, and it helps. Like, it actually is more helpful when people do that. When a volunteer takes that initiative, it actually takes more of the weight off of the planner / the main teacher. Because we've got teachers who are asking for volunteers this week. Luke's mom came in once already, and she's going to go in again this week to help Colin's classroom teacher. And several of the grandparents, actually, is very cute. Many grandmothers were in the kitchen with their fourth grade students this week, and I about exploded with all the cuteness. And they're coming in again. And so I told Mrs. Neer, who's Colin's teacher, I said, as you know, some of our volunteers feel a little more comfortable with a very, very rigid list of to-dos. Like, right. Do this. And that's great as far as there's a lot of that to do this week. But in general, when you have somebody who just needs the vision, when you're like, this is the goal and we're trying to do this thing and get this accomplished, and then they can go, got it. And they already know in their own head what they're capable of.
Leave it to me.
Yes.
You can move on to something else because I know what to do.
Because no matter what ends up getting thrown at me, I'm not going to come back to you and check in every 5 seconds. Like, you know, she wanted me to work on some essays with some fourth graders. I was like, okay, I want them to put it in their own words and make it sound like a fourth grader wrote it. But right. also there's 10 of them and I only have an hour and a half every day. And so we're going to do this educationally for about 20 minutes to 30 minutes. But then by the time class is winding down, we're going to not be quite as focused on that.
Right.
We'll switch to a different objective. And I did that just because as a teacher myself, I knew that that would be what I would want from a volunteer if I was the main teacher in that situation.
Right.
So,
well, it's true that if you have to line out all of the details and then manage the person who's doing the job, then you might as well do the job yourself.
Right.
Because managing a manager is also a full-time responsibility.
Right.
And it doesn't really help you to put somebody into a position that you have to then hold their hand and shove them step by step through the process.
Right.
We went through a whole thing as a church about empowering deacons. You know, what is the role of the elder? What is the role of the deacon? How can we empower our deacons? And I would say changing up communion would fit within that scope. It would
be very empowering.
Well,
right.
Support them when that happens. As every now and then, a deacon's going to forget he's got communion duty. Another deacon's going to step up and in the pinch go, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do this, you know, final call, huddle call or whatever they call it. Mm-hmm. What do you do it when you don't talk to the coach? You just make the call in the huddle. Anyway.
She doesn't know how football works, does
that,
she?
That's a thing, isn't it? What is that called?
An audible?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Is that what it's called?
Call an audible?
Is that where that term comes from?
Yeah, where you make up a different play than the one that was originally going to be called.
Yeah. without consulting the...
You get your play from the coach, you line up at the scrimmage, you look at the defense, you're like, oh, this play is not going to work. So you call an audible, which is a change of play on the fly.
Yep.
That would best be effective against that defense you're looking at.
So if you want to empower your team, then when that happens, you don't beat down the person who made that. Even if it's not the greatest call, you still need to support the fact that they were trying to take that initiative. And I think there have been some examples in the past of various people trying to do things. One involved Easter eggs a few years ago, decorating with Easter eggs. Every now and then,
well, yours truly has been the recipient of more than one harsh criticism for doing things outside of the box.
Yes, and I invited people to our homeschool, open house a couple years ago, and just about set everybody's hair on fire. I said some things about the sacred government school that people who are Christians shouldn't say, but that's germane though.
That was fair. Short version of that, Carl, is just what she said. We had a little video that we put together to advertise your homeschool co-op, basically was what it was. Just come in and see how homeschool works on Fridays.
Because if you want to take responsibility for your kids' education the way that we're commanded to, but you're not really sure what that could look like, you know, I'm not capable for one reason or another, then come and talk and tell me what your situation is.
There were a couple of things in there about the public school system is not dedicated to raising Christians. And I mean, it's pagan. They don't have the same philosophy. I don't remember exactly what the words were, but it was clear enough that the leadership, some of the leaders were uncomfortable with it. But the reason it has to do with what we're talking about today is that there were a number of people who watched that video, and the people who were convinced in their mind that it was going to scandalize the congregation were wrong, because there were a number of people who were like applauding when it was over.
I've never heard somebody clap for an announcement before.
But there was.
there were that time.
So yes, there were some people who were offended because they thought that it was taking a personal shot at public school teachers specifically, which it wasn't. But they felt like it was. But there were also some people who were like, yeah, this is exactly the right thing to do. Right. This is exactly the right direction to go.
Well, and when I say we, I mean our family, the Brannion/McKinney households, had already talked at length about the message in that video, what the potential fallout could be.
We knew that it was going to ruffle some feathers.
How we would handle it. I'm like, I'm the one going to the church weekly, letting myself in and opening up the doors in case somebody wants to come and talk. So what would I do if one of the members who was angry, you know, showed up and was confrontational? Like, what would that look like? Is this something that I could defend? Is this a video that if or when somebody was upset by it, I was capable of having that conversation? And we had decided I was.
Yes.
Like, I'm ready for that. Whatever that conversation might be, I'm ready for it. But I think that the main problem, the main disempowering thing that was happening from the leadership was the idea that, like, I didn't know what I was getting into and I needed them to clean up this mess that I had made.
Right.
And it's like, that's not how I roll. Like, when I,
right. We,
when I they say were, a thing,
they
I
said
see
as much.
I do.
We want to take some time to review this and roll it out in a different way because we're all of this potential fallout. And right. We're like, yeah, we're way ahead of you on this. We already know what the objections are going to be. We even know who specifically is going to raise these objections.
Well, and I mean, I think importantly, not one of those leaders had ever been to my homeschool co-op.
Right.
Not one. None of them had ever been in the classroom that I was inviting everybody to come to. And so my point to them was, if you don't trust me to be doing this, like homeschooling here on campus,
then I shouldn't be here.
Then you need to tell me to stop coming. Like, right. This is either a big deal that has the potential to shift the culture at our church, because education is super important, and I am literally responsible for the education of those four kids at the time.
I am spearheading the paradigm shift.
And I'm inviting other people to come and learn how I do it. And all of that is a big deal. And if you don't realize that that's what's happening under this roof, such that, like, you want to be cautious telling people that it's happening, then that's a bigger conversation that needs to happen before, right. You know, anything else. But anyway...
Right,
yes.
But that's all true. But that's a thing where you're talking about who you're going to get permission from, who you're going to get permission from, and who are you worried about upsetting? And then you've got some people who were in charge. Officially, they were leaders, but they weren't ready. They weren't really ready to lead. They weren't ready to stand up behind a particular idea and say, "No, though, this is what we're going to do." I understand that you're upset. I understand that you have feelings about this particular thing, but this is the decision that we've made. This is why we've made the decision, and we think it's a good reason.
Right.
And that's what it's the people who haven't thought it through. This is getting back to what we were talking about. Those are the people that we're worried about upsetting.
Yep.
The people who don't know what they're talking about, the people who are having emotional reactions, the people who are ultimately standing in the way of moving forward.
Yep.
They're progress. Standing in the way of doing the right thing. And that's who we're worried about.
Right.
You know, the people who are going to be on board, the people who applaud, for example,
we don't care
what their opinion
is. We don't even hear it.
we don't give a rip about what they think. We're only worried about the people who are mad.
Well, all that to say, a good leader, a good CEO, a good soccer commissioner, a good person who's in charge actually does appreciate having people on their team who put together their own ad, who are ready to have the conversation with the customers directly without, you know, needing a bunch of handholding. They like that and they appreciate it. It's the leaders who are not actually leaders or who are leaders in name only who are the most frightened by empowered deacons or empowered, you know, coaches or empowered teachers. People who take initiative generally are appreciated by good leaders, whereas people who take initiative are threats and scary to people who are just kind of trying to maintain status quo, which isn't really leadership at all. So,
well, the status quo doesn't upset people. That's not true.
That's
the status
not
quo
true.
The status quo upsets me.
The status quo upsets actual leaders.
That's true.
People who are trying to do good things.
But the people that they don't want to upset, they don't want to deal with it. They don't want to deal with the people who are gonna whine and complain and yell.
Right.
And so then they're gonna get mad at you or me or somebody who's trying to make it, somebody who's separating communion into two plates.
Right.
They're gonna get mad at that person because if you hadn't done this, if you'd have just left communion the way it was, then this person wouldn't be yammering at me.
Right.
And then I wouldn't have to deal with it.
And what's funny is a real leader, a good leader with experience knows that's not true. That they know that whenever you're leading, somebody's going to be mad. And so only somebody who has no leadership experience actually thinks that we could have avoided all of this if we had just kept communion exactly the way it had always been. That's not true. You're going to get people complaining no matter what. So when somebody comes to me and they're upset, I go, oh, okay, I kind of expected that somebody would be. And then we go, how are we going to figure this out? How are we going to sort it out? But a person with no leadership experience goes, oh, no, somebody's upset. And it like completely throws them for a loop.
Let's completely reel back in all of the changes that we thought we were going to make for all of these good reasons. Let's reel all of that back in.
You can tell, I can tell who a good experienced leader is based on how they talk about conflict. Do they talk about it like something we're trying to avoid because it's even possible to avoid it? Or do they talk about it like something that we manage, not if, but when it happens? And that was one of the things that impressed me about the kids' principal at their current school. He was talking about that they were moving buildings. They're now at our church for the first time, and they used to be at a church downtown.
For decades.
15 years, yeah, since they started. The school began at that other church, and now they were looking for another one all of a sudden in a matter of weeks, trying to find a place to live. And the way that he was talking about all that was not like, oh, fingers crossed, hopefully we can avoid all the conflict and there's not going to be any controversy and drama.
Right. Hopefully it'll be smooth.
Well, he was like, hopefully it'll be as smooth as possible.
Hopefully it'll be no hiccups, no bumps.
But he was like, yeah, you know, I fully expect that there will be people who disagree with this decision. They're going to have a lot of trouble with the change. You know, that's human. And he was like, he was describing it as a dance. We're going to do this dance, probably going to step on some toes, but you know, we'll do that as little as possible and then recover as quickly as possible. And like all of that, I just thought to myself, wow, that's kind of refreshing. It's refreshing to have somebody have that reaction to life's inevitable bumps,
right,
instead of going, oh my gosh, we shouldn't have played that video in church. Somebody's mad. It's like, of course somebody's mad. Is this your first? Oh yeah, it is.
It is your first.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
You think that it's possible. You think it's possible to have a church, an assemblage of human beings, and not have somebody out of joint.
Yep.
You think that there's a way to do that.
Yeah. Is that what we were going to talk about?
I don't know what we were going to talk about. Did you have an idea?
No.
Oh.
No. Did you have something, Luke? Open up your backpack.
Open up your backpack has been a source of conversation today.
What do I have in there?
It's because he influenced Joe with it. And Joe now has my a sister's backpack. Husband is also carrying a conversation backpack.
He was totally serious, too, about... He knows exactly what it is and what it's for, and he referenced how he was using it. I was like, that's exactly how you do it, bro.
Oh my gosh.
That's exactly how you keep communication.
Because he's been studying homeschooling, and he said he's got about 25 minutes worth of conversation. So he's got these topics that he keeps in this backpack so that he can whip them out.
It's not a real backpack, Carl.
No,
it's a hypothetical.
It's an imaginary backpack for when you want to have a good conversation with your spouse that she would find intriguing.
Right, with
the essence of it is Luke is convinced that...
Because if you whip out all 25 topics at once, you're left with nothing.
Luke is convinced that there's a finite amount of information, finite amount of things to talk about. Right. And if he just talks about them, you know, at random moments, you're wasting it. You're wasting good conversation.
Yeah.
And it needs to be saved for exactly the right moment. Now, exactly when the right moment is, we're still a little fuzzy on how you determine
that. What's amazing about this whole backpack thing is that no matter how often the wives say, we hate the backpack,
we hate it.
Can we please just talk about why the backpack fails? They're like, no.
No.
That is not a conversation we're going to have.
The conversation is not in the backpack.
We are only going to save this 25 minutes of homeschool conversation material.
That's what Joe said.
I only have
2 minutes total of conversation about homeschooling.
It's the pretense that they're doing it for us that's the most annoying.
It is. I don't think you hate the backpack. I think you hate that we need the backpack.
It is. I guess that's probably
true. Are we allowed
to
talk about it or no? How many minutes worth of backpack-related conversation
this
do you
was
have?
Something that wasn't in the backpack but has been in my head today.
Oh, okay.
Especially the discussion that we had at church, mm-hmm. where you were disinvited from a charity event for not being Christian enough in their eyes.
Being too Christian.
Being too Christian.
Too Christian.
Yeah.
And you said that you would be more careful moving forward who you yoked yourself with. And it made me think of my own situation working for a company that is slowly but surely moving in a direction that is away from my faith, which I think all secular institutions are probably doing that.
Yeah, if they're not expressly Christian, then they
are. Yeah, if you're not expressly Christian, then you are moving.
Then you will eventually be secular. You will eventually be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm very much a part of that institution. And these Christians in our church who work for public schools are in the same situation. At what point do you decide to break off that association versus...
So here's... I know you're talking to Dad.
You know.
But I'm the reason that he started thinking about this. How are we going to take shows in the future with nonprofits specifically? Mm-hmm. And I was like, look, they're actually doing damage. If they're not giving glory to God, they're actually instilling secular humanism. And so not only are they just actively harming,
right,
you know, this disadvantaged youth that they're trying to help, if all they're doing is giving them money and they're not giving them Jesus, then they're hurting them. And so I was the one who kind of got it started, like, well, maybe we should be proactive about it. So instead of letting them cancel us, maybe we should make it very clear. But I don't think it's necessary to, like, put in your 2 weeks notice and leave.
No.
I think all that's necessary is for you to make it clear that you are a committed Christian and that you give all of the glory to God for everything and that you stand opposed to anybody or any institution that does not give glory to God. And I think the chips will fall where they need to.
Well, truth be told, if you said, you know, everything that we do here system-wide is the result of God's grace and goodness,
mm-hmm,
what are they going to say? You know, how are they going to, what are they going to say?
It, like,
no, it's not.
Could it be similar to waking up and realizing that you are yoked to an unbelieving spouse? Like, mm-hmm, where the Bible says don't divorce
when
them.
When it comes to your, well, in this country, when it comes to your job, theoretically you have a choice. You know, who you spend your time with and help their vision and all of that. And so should we be choosing masters, quote unquote, who are not believers?
What I'm saying is that you don't have to let them be your master.
Right. That's.
I'm saying that if you were to choose to be the leader, to take the initiative, I'm not going to ask anybody. I'm just
going
to.
We're making some changes right, this is around
the,
here.
This doesn't need to go through the board. This is what's true. Everything that we do is a reflection of God's love and goodness.
Mm-hmm. If you're in
whether
meetings,
you believe it or not, whether the board believes it or not, who are they?
Right. If you're in meetings as often as you are, and you're in a lot of meetings, and you just become the guy who, like, says blatantly Christian things, you know, you're glorifying God all the time, that's going to get noticed. Now, I don't know how it's going to be noticed. Just like I didn't know that there would be people cheering for the message about homeschooling. I didn't know whether everybody was going to stand up in unison and storm out of the building. I didn't know what the response would be. But I was prepared for either one because I was comfortable with what the message was that I was putting out there. So I think that perhaps just making sure that your message is one of being God glorifying, if it's an expressly Christian message in every single thing that you do, one of two things will probably happen. You will either start to realize that some of the people who are actually above you on the hierarchy also identify as Christians and have been waiting for a sign or looking for ways that they could also practice it more openly. That's possible. Or you're going to get fired. Right. But either way, you don't have to be the one that's like, that's it. I'm cutting ties. I'm burning this bridge. I'm out of here.
Well, the idea of being yoked too is like when you're yoked, you're both working. You're both stuck together. You're going in the same direction. You're pulling in the same direction. But it's you're not yoked to them philosophically if they're if they're not willing to be yoked to you.
Well,
if you're gonna say, well, this is all for the glory of God. Everything that I do for my job is for God's glory. All the strength that I have, the wisdom that I have, everything that I have, I'm just basically giving back to my Creator. And that's a philosophy. And if they don't share that philosophy, well, then you're not yoked to them.
Well, and he's not yoked to people really in any way. In his job right now, you work alone.
What? I'm yoked to you.
No, I mean at the hospital.
She's talking about it.
I mean specifically in your job. Career. Like, you are by yourself. You let yourself into that office. You made your own little sign that says, please don't shut this door because I don't have a key and I can't get back in. He made that. He made his own sign. He found the box of Christmas decorations back in November and decorated his own office.
Decorated his own office.
With Christmas stuff. He doesn't know whose it is. So that's the type of thing I'm talking about, but like,
you're your own boss.
With a Christian bent, perhaps, instead of just being like, what's the worst that's going to happen? Who's going to come in here and be upset that I put up a Christmas tree or whatever?
Yeah.
So yeah, the more you're willing to do that, you know, with the truth of the Christian faith, I think that eventually you're going to get noticed. Eventually somebody's going to be like, Luke, who let you in this room and who gave you this box of ornaments?
Why are you here?
Are you painting?
And then you can be like,
who told you could paint?
God ultimately is the one who told me I could.
Right, right. Well, it's a fine line between being that weirdo religious nut and actually being
a... God told me to sing on this plane.
Yeah, and being a guy who's honestly just, look, this is what I think. This is how I roll. Right. And if you disagree with that, well, what are who gets credit for you?
Right.
It can at least lead to a conversation.
That's true.
Well, they're paying you. Yeah. And who are you? Well, you are child of God. You are follower of Christ. And so it's time for them to know who exactly they've got on their payroll.
It's time for them to realize the severity of their mistake.
They've thought they liked you for an awful long time.
I actually do think, though, that what you said earlier would apply, that people who are real leaders, people who are genuine leaders, would appreciate and understand a person who lives by their convictions. I do what I do because I think that this is the right thing to do. And I always try to do what I think is the right thing to do. An actual leader is not going to be offended. Now, they may have some peon leaders who are above them who are going to make your life difficult. But at the end of the day, it's the people who... people who really have values and convictions recognize it and appreciate it when other people show theirs.
I'm gonna call an audible and restart this theme song.
Why?
We have like 45 seconds left of it, which isn't even enough for the outro. And take two.
All right, let's see you next time, Carl.
Thanks for visiting the Comedian's House. If you want to spend more time with our family, you can follow John Branion on YouTube and Facebook. Also, email nextdoor@johnbranion.com with your comments and questions. We'll see you next time.